from Nelnet Renewable Energy.
This is What's Up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Today, we are joined by Tucker Perkins from the Propane Education and Research Council. Hey, Tucker, thanks for coming on.
Hey, good afternoon. Really, really happy to be with you today.
Yeah, we were, just before we pressed record here, we were just talking about where we're all from. You know, Marie and I are up here in Illinois in some, you know, maybe not so good weather. Where are you recording out of today?
So I live in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia, and we started with a typical winter morning, but now it's almost 60 degrees and lovely. Looking forward to a good weekend, I think.
That's like swimsuit weather for us here in Chicago at this time of year. But hey, Tucker, thanks again for joining us today. Can you maybe introduce yourself to the listeners and, give us a sense of who you are and maybe a little bit of your background?
Yeah. Thanks, Connor. So I'm the president and CEO of a really unique organization called the Propane Education and Research Council. We don't sell propane. We don't sell things that use propane. We tend to labor for the industry one, and then also people that use propane. So we really do three things, and I think we do them pretty well. We're deeply involved in safety and training, making the industry safer, making consumers, aware of what happens if you smell propane, what happens, how do you use propane safely? A lot of emphasis, and it's really fun to use modern technology and safety and training. We have a fair amount of awareness. So helping consumers and builders and farmers and forklift operators and fleets think about how to use propane in their applications. You're in Illinois, huge business up there with us for things that people don't talk about. Commercial mowing, super clean compared to gasoline or diesel fuel in a commercial mower. It's been kind of a hotbed. Farmers, everybody in Illinois is quite familiar with grain and corn. Propane is, the predominant way most farmers dry their corn. So things just creating awareness. And then lastly, which is probably how I was drawn to this position, is we are active investors and partners in more efficient grain dryers, more efficient forklifts, new ways to cook your food on gas stoves. And we probably have any one time 40 or 50 different partnerships that range from water heating to agricultural to transportation. So neat position. And I think people don't really get propane. People who use it think about it, but so many people, like anyone in downtown Chicago, is probably not thinking about it. But propane is such a neat fuel as we think about what we need in a modern fuel that's cleaner than diesel, perhaps, equal to electricity today, and certainly maybe even equivalent to that electricity we dream of in a decade or two. So it's a really neat job and one that I've been privileged to do for really almost 10 years now.
Fantastic. I'm excited to talk with you everything that you just covered, but I want to kick it off with, how does the use of propane as an energy source contribute to reducing emissions compared to some of the traditional fuels that you just mentioned?
And it's fun because if we compare ourselves to the traditional gasoline, diesel, maybe heating oil, it's quite easy to talk about how they benefit the climate. Really, first off, you think about storage of diesel fuel, gasoline, or even heating oil, really dirty to store. If it were to leak, it contaminates the soil, the groundwater. You know, with propane, you have none of that. But more importantly, when you use it, let's compare it to diesel for a second. When we burn propane in an engine compared to a diesel engine, we can reduce many of those harmful emissions by 97%, sometimes 100% if we're talking about particulate matter. Even greenhouse gases, the hard one for all of us, we might cut greenhouse gases 25 to 30%. So significantly cleaner to store, cleaner to use than diesel fuel. I would say, and we'll talk about it, I guess, as we get into it, I don't think that comparison is good enough anymore. I want to compare us to not only diesel fuel and gasoline, but I want to start comparing us to hydrogen or electricity, because we really have a great story to tell there, too.
You know, I think that's a really interesting point you make, too, because, I am definitely not a propane expert by any stretch, but I do know that there have been a lot of advancements recently with making propane a lot more renewable than, you know, than, like you said, people usually don't think of propane as renewable. So can you maybe talk a little bit about that? You know, are there, since there have been advancements, or I guess, are there advancements that are actively going on to make propane more renewable?
Yeah, Connor, this was something that we kind of whispered about in the back halls 6 or 7 years ago, right? We here we were, you know, awash with conventional propane, and now we're daring to begin to think about renewable propane. And I'll tell you just a fast story. I was actually in California meeting with California Air Resources Board and making a significant pitch at the time how we could improve the air quality of the ports of California by using propane. And I think to the point I had convinced them, and they said, but what is your path to zero carbon, right? Where are you in renewable fuel? And I said, well, we just talked about it for 30 minutes. And I could tell you how we're so much cleaner than diesel. We could make an immediate impact in the ports of California today. And they said, but what's your path to zero? Because without a path to zero carbon, we won't consider you a fuel of today, much less a fuel of the future. And I really took that conversation to heart. And we went back and began investing and learning. In fact, today we have 3 PhDs on staff that pretty much just do emissions and renewable fuels. So the answer to your question is today we make renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, and renewable propane the same way. We take used cooking oils or some other agricultural oils, and we treat them in a refinery just the way we do make a lot of other chemical processes, and we can turn used cooking oil into renewable propane. And historically today we're doing it. We're doing it at scale today, usually in a refinery that will make renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, and renewable propane. They generally are making 2 of those 3 products. Very heavily driven towards California markets right now. But what to me is really exciting is if you and I had this conversation 12 months ago, I would have stopped right there. I would have said, that's kind of how we're doing it. Fast forward to today, we're really, we now have a second pathway actually in operation using drought tolerant, non-food cover crops. The one that I talk about is camelina plant. And I thought I was somewhat of a farmer. I never even heard of camelina plant, but farmers who either have fallow land or taking a field out of rotation, they'll plant camelina, and it looks to a degree like a soybean. But they grow it, they combine it, and they take the beans, crush them, they turn it into an oil, and that oil quite easily turns to renewable propane. We're working on really 11 other pathways, and some of them are really exciting. Some of them probably will never happen, but 2 or 3 others are going to clearly happen. And make renewable propane truly relevant in the whole conversation. I do probably want to back up and just add one thing. A lot of people say, I don't understand this renewable. It's really about how we start with the carbon. In the case of used cooking oil, we're taking a waste product and converting it to something useful. I'm involved in a really exciting project in Chile where we actually take abundant sunshine, used carbon, we make hydrogen, we blend it with this used carbon. And the trouble with hydrogen is that it's really difficult to store and transport and then use. So instead of making renewable hydrogen, we're making renewable propane. Then we're making it where we have abundant sun and water, then we transport it 1,000 miles to where the people live. And so we're actually starting to even investigate some of that. So it's really, you know, when you go to that part of the technology, it's really exciting to think where we weren't 10 years ago and where we are today. But I would say this, and I think renewable natural gas, I say it all the time, renewable natural gas is real. It's real today. And renewable propane is also just now coming into being real, not something that's a greenwash. Let me kind of head fake you with these words. It's truly benefiting the climate and reducing carbon. So it's really exciting.
That's really cool. I appreciate you in making the point. Like, I would have stopped there a couple months, 12 months ago, and now look how far we've come. I want to ask you, looking into, and maybe this might be premature, but looking into the next 12 months with how rapidly this is evolving, like, what do you foresee happening or innovations come with propane and renewable propane?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the good news about renewable propane is it behaves, once we make it, it behaves just like propane. So we can use it in your stove. We can use it in a camp stove. We could use it in your fireplace. You know, we're really thinking more about using it in engines because that's where it's really gives us the most economic benefit for the climate. And we're really thinking about that in three big buckets: medium duty transportation, material handling, a lot around the ports, and then lastly, power generation. So that real answer to your question is not in the fuel itself, but it's in how we're beginning to innovate in these applications. So again, 10 years ago, and we've been working on this for 20 years, we'll talk a little bit about efficiency, and it's kind of been something we've worked on for literally 20 years. But just in the last couple years, we've been able to use modern engineering with modern production, and now we're starting to make engines that are as thermally efficient as diesel engines. They're also as durable as diesel engines, but they offer all of these benefits of better for the climate, cheaper to buy, cheaper to operate, and really all of a sudden makes a significant difference to companies like UPS or FedEx that are thinking about, you know, how do I have trucks that I can afford and get packages delivered to our houses here at Christmas time? How can we do that in the most cost-effective way? But it just ripples through the whole economy. And so where I really get most excited is with companies like Cummins. We've been involved with Cummins for a project probably 8 years. That engine is still 2 years away from the marketplace. But when it gets here, it'll be the most efficient, environmentally friendly, and powerful engine that we've ever produced. And it's nothing unique other than great engineering meeting modern production with modern engineering. So that's where I get really excited.
When you're looking at the chemical, and I'm talking out of turn here, so please correct me, I think you'll know where I'm going. When you look at the chemical compound of the renewable propane versus traditional run-of-the-mill how propane is made, are they similar no matter what?
It's exactly the same. The only difference is the origin of the carbon, how we got that original carbon. Today we get most of the propane in the United States from cleaning up natural gas. When you find natural gas, it has some heavier things in it, and one of those heavier things is propane. And that's where most of the organic traditional propane comes from. But as you think about renewable propane, and you're right, whether we make it from a methane flare or whether we make it from a used cooking oil, at the end of the day, you could put it under a microscope and it's exactly the same. The only difference is where it's how it got its carbon. It's a really hard concept to get your head around. And you know, we tend to think about some of this in terms of carbon intensity. That's kind of the way scientists talk about the impact of fuels. The carbon intensity, for example, the carbon intensity of diesel fuel is pretty close to 100. Conventional propane's 79. Renewable propane that we're making today is 11 or 12. But when I just talked about making it from recaptured methane, so say a gas well that's just flaring methane into the atmosphere, we are now at pilot scales of capturing that. And when we do it, we haven't applied for the pathway, but we think that could be minus 300 carbon intensity. So you begin to see two things, right? How bad flaring methane is into the atmosphere, because it's a pretty reactive greenhouse gas, but how beneficial it could be if we could capture that and do something else with it. So really exciting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Tucker, you made an interesting comment earlier that I kind of wanted to expand on. And that was, like, right now, propane has, you know, it's used in, like you said, like ports. It's used in, you know, medium to heavy transportation. Farmers use it. Obviously, like, you know, here in Illinois, you drive by any, you know, farming compound facility, you're going to see tanks of propane. Do you kind of envision in the future, you know, a larger stake of the overall transportation industry kind of allocated towards propane use?
Yeah, so I certainly do. And so let's put it in perspective. Today, we sell about 10 billion gallons of propane in the U.S. And 70% of that goes just for residences and commercial buildings, generally for heat or hot water or cooking or whatever. We sell about a billion gallons to farmers. So now we're up to 8.5, and the rest is kind of spread between all kinds of uses, transportation, forklifts, primarily. Put that in perspective, 60 billion gallons of diesel fuel are used every year. 60 billion gallons are used in the United States every year. And so we are confident. I don't think we'll ever be 60 billion gallons. I don't think that's really reasonable to think about. But I certainly think that in medium-duty trucking, heavy-duty trucking, we can not only offer all of the benefits that people have looked for diesel, range, payload, power, you know, all of those things, but we can do it in a way that's much better for the environment and much better for not only the trucking company, the driver, the roads they drive on, but actually the end consumer who has to pay for those goods and services. So, you know, I'm often saying that we're a 10 billion gallon a year industry, and we should be 15 billion gallons a year just by taking that slice of diesel fuel that we can take right now and clean the skies, quiet the streets, make drivers healthier, and then make us all be able to afford the goods and services that are delivered in those trucks.
Can you tell us a little bit about current or potential government policies or incentives that support the use of this cleaner version of propane?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. And, you know, one of the things about my job that's interesting, because just of the way we were created, we don't lobby. We don't work the federal government. We don't even engage in legislative or regulatory affairs. We let other people do that for us, but we're certainly impacted by it. And we have opinions. And, you know, when people ask us about how we could do this, we share our opinion. So first off, the government for years has been very good about acknowledging we need to limit diesel. We need to make diesel less and less. And there are cleaner alternative fuels like propane. So there have been grants, most of them call them DERA grants, Diesel Emission Reduction Acts, that have been pretty helpful in transitioning from diesel to propane. And we've certainly been a beneficiary of that. I would say the last couple years, maybe even last 4 or 5 years, it's been really tilted towards thinking about battery electric vehicles, maybe even creating hydrogen. You see, you know, we just spent $7 billion to create hydrogen hubs around the country. So I think the last couple years, the incentives and investments have been tilted towards trying to figure out how to get there with cleaner electricity or hydrogen. But I think now, just now, we're seeing the pendulum swing back. I kind of watch Europe in this area a lot, and actually it's almost amazing. I wish all of us would just look to Europe, because they're about 4 or 5 years ahead of us, and we could avoid making so many mistakes that we see them making. But Europe tends to be coming back now to at least embracing renewable liquid fuels. You know, how could things like renewable propane actually solve transportation, solve those hard to decarbonize sectors like steel, cement, heavy duty, medium duty transportation? So the first answer to your question is we have benefited from grants and incentives that reduce diesel emissions. And I think we're just now starting to be back at the table as we think about that it is a wide path solution. This is not going to be a world where electricity powers everything. And I don't think that's good for consumers. I don't think it's good for the climate. I don't think it's going to achieve its intended goal singularly, right? There's some places that electricity works. You know, you talked earlier, Connor, about transportation. I don't even think transportation is one single thing. Highly likely that we'll drive electric vehicles more and more and more as consumers that go to the store, go to church, go to work. But tractor trailers that drive from LA to New York with 80,000 pounds of payload, highly unlikely that they ever become battery electric. It's just in one day it might happen, but it is a long ways off. And so I talk often about this wide path to a cleaner climate. And I love looking at UPS as a great example. UPS believes in hydrogen, electricity, hybrid vehicles, natural gas vehicles, propane vehicles, and they run gasoline and diesel. You know, they've got, and they have a big enough fleet that they can use each fuel in the places that best suits them.
And Tucker, I think you make some really good points there, because, you know, a lot of times when people think about renewables or like electric vehicles, right, you know, everybody thinks it's like, hey, yeah, okay, we're going to, you know, flip a switch or turn on a light bulb, and next thing you know, everybody, you know, everybody on the planet's going to be driving, you know, Teslas or Chevy EVs or, you know, whatever it might be. When in reality, right, a lot of it is, you know, it's a transition, and it may not just be a transition from gas and diesel all to electric vehicles, right? I mean, it's, you know, it could be gas and diesel into a disbursement of, you know, electric, propane, hydrogen, right? Depending on the industry, right? Because it's not a one size fits all solution, right? Just as, you know, our airplanes don't use, you know, gasoline or diesel, right? You know, our cars don't use, you know, Jet A. So I think that's a super important point to make. And I think a lot of that, right, a lot of that, that I wouldn't say misunderstanding, but a lot of reason people think that is because there isn't a ton of education or awareness out there about what the transition really looks like. Folks out there think that, right, you can just flip a light switch and, you know, we instantly transition from, you know, coal or you know, gas and diesel over to, yeah, you know, all 100% electric vehicles. And
yeah, I think how do we educate that? I'm yes, with you. And I think, you know, that's an area. In fact, as I was thinking about this, some days I wonder, you know, about how do we educate consumers, right? Because I think the one thing that strikes me, I've kind of been in this business all my life. I understand natural gas from drilling all the way to how you use it at, you know, when you turn it on a burner in your home. You know, I've really learned most of the complexities of the electric grid, and it's unbelievably complex, right? So to ask someone who's trying to raise their family, pay their bills, you know, make a mark in their community to understand the complexities of the energy system, it's probably too much to ask. But, you know, the one thing we love talking about people about, what problem are you trying to solve? Are you solely interested in climate? Are you more interested in climate plus your health? Are you interested in climate plus your health plus environmental justice and all those things? And so there's where we start talking to a lot of fleets, for starters, or a lot of municipalities as they're thinking about, you know, operate the port. And by the way, it doesn't have to be the port of Long Beach. It could be those inland ports that surround you in Illinois as you have, you know, all of America's goods coming in and out, you know, in trucks and trailer and trains. And so there you have all these inland ports. But talking with business about how moving from diesel to, in our case, to propane. But sometimes we say, no, I don't think propane is the best for you. Maybe this is another thing that's best for you. And so talking to consumers, and then we spend a lot of time with a website and using other people's voices to, in fact, talk to consumers. Because we think at the end of the day, consumers need to be involved in this conversation around the energy transformation. I for one, you know, often find some of the investment misguided from my perspective. And as we sit here and look at some things, you know, you look at mental health issues to a degree, or even legitimate transportation issues like roads, bridges, you know, some of the investment I feel like we need to really be thinking about redirecting towards social issues like that. So we spend a lot of time. We have a website, propane.com, where at least we really try to drive consumers there. Maybe they use propane, maybe they'll never use propane, but we want it to be kind of a fair look at how propane fits into this conversation.
Earlier in our conversation, you mentioned California is a lot of where your work is right now. Are you seeing any other states in the U.S. or maybe even overseas that you're interested in expanding to or gaining that?
Yeah, it's a great question. In fact, I'm just back. I get together with my contemporaries from all over the world and we really compare notes. But to be very clear, propane is used in all 50 states today. And I would say states like California, Minnesota, North Carolina. They kind of fight back and forth to see who will be the largest user of propane year over year. But, you know, we impact the lives of people in all 50 states for sure. They rely on us for building heat, grain drying, hot showers, cooking, whatever. But I think, you know, where we just are consistently looking is, how do we think the electric grid will transform? What role can we play? It's a really different way to look at it. We're not trying to figure out how we can sell more propane. We're really trying to figure out, you know, where does this energy transformation take us? And in the wide path as we see it, where do we best fit? And that's why we consistently come back to, clearly, and I don't want to ever talk about how people think about propane beyond the natural gas mains, or how farmers think about it, because it's a critical part of their life that they just need us for building heat, water heat, cooking. But as we kind of think about the future, we really stay focused on medium duty transportation, power generation, from everything from backup generator at your house to literally utility scale microgrids. And we're doing some of those today. And then clearly material handling. In other words, everywhere we can make an impact on replacing diesel with a lower carbon, cleaner fuel, that's also more affordable as an engine and more affordable to operate. That's where we really stay focused.
I have one more question about that. When it comes to sourcing your propane, my life with propane is the tanks that go to the grill, which is a smaller scale, it sounds like, than what you guys are working with. But are there labels or anything that consumers can look at for on these to show that this was made from a renewable source?
No. So first off, that's where most people, you know, think about propane. In fact, probably the most frustrating part of my job is, in any one year, so many people will say, I have a propane grill. I love it. I have no idea how that fuel in my grill can be a transformative fuel for America or for the world. And, you know, then we tell the story, and I think over time they see it. But I think where we see it is that's an easy story to tell, how we can be transformative. We're just now. So if you went with me to certain events that are really highlighting renewable propane, for example, I was at an event not long ago where we cooked all the food on renewable propane, and those cylinders were well marked. But I think today, just given first off, the laws around renewable propane are such that the producers are incentivized to use it for transportation, and then California gives an additional incentive, Oregon and Washington State. So you're seeing most of that blow up to where the incentives are maximized. But in the last, this year, 2023, we've brought renewable propane into Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Virginia. So we're seeing it begin to migrate across the country for a lot of things beyond transportation, just because either propane providers or their customers want to start doing the right thing and using a cleaner fuel. And so I do think in due time, we'll begin at least marking that as such. This cylinder contains renewable propane.
Great question, Marie. And thanks for diving into that, Tucker. I've got one more question for you. We touched a little bit on this earlier around, you know, kind of government policies and initiatives, but I kind of wanted to shift a little bit towards a little bit more of the private sector and really kind of pose the question to you, you know, right now or in the future, you know, do you foresee or are there currently any kind of initiatives that are going on, you know, across propane and other, you know, types of renewable industries, whether that's solar, wind, whatever renewable industry, right, we can name in there. But are there any kind of initiatives or programs that you're aware of that are in development?
Oh, yeah. So it's numerous programs, and I think ones that we're excited about. So one would certainly be thinking about how to make renewable fuels even more efficiently. And so lots of universities, quite a few government labs working with us in that area. And that work will continue, even as we even think about hydrogen, and perhaps hydrogen and propane are a whole lot closer linked than you might first think, again, because hydrogen is relatively easy to make, relatively difficult to store, transport, and use. And so lots of cross opportunities as we kind of think about ultimately going to a hydrogen economy, how we might first make hydrogen and use it in the form of renewable propane. But the other issue is just technologies. And I mean, you and I could talk for the next day, but I'll just mention a couple. Marie asked about, you know, other worldwide things. If you go to Japan today, Toyota makes one of the most innovative propane hybrid vehicles on the planet. It would be a very common taxi in Japan. So working with Toyota to think about how to bring that innovative hybrid engine to America, working with Renai to think about not only just hot water, but a really innovative hybrid heating system to our homes that's really already working in Japan. How do we bring that to the U.S.? And I could talk to you for hours about those kinds of partnerships. And that is the fun part of our job, is not only thinking about some of these new technologies from the ground up, but making sure that I talked about Chile is making ELG, they call it, where we're making propane, but we start with green hydrogen. Japan has two or three technologies that we're trying to bring over here. And so it's really exciting. And I will tell you, universities, I was thinking about this as we were prepping for this, universities across the country and across the world are working, you know, with us on a lot of these technologies, quite a few government labs. We're really happy for the collaboration with Department of Energy, both vehicle technologies and building technologies and biotechnologies, thinking about renewable fuels. So much going on. We're super collaborative with the Japanese, pretty advanced as they think about how to use propane differently. So yes, so much going on. It's really exciting. And I think it's why a lot of people look at me and say, gosh, you're really optimistic for a person that's championing this fossil fuel, if you will, at a time when everybody's talking about we must get rid of fossil fuels. And I think I really love to talk about it. This war should not be around, I don't even use the word fossil fuels, but it's not about fossil fuels. It's about greenhouse gases. And people often forget that perhaps using propane could actually be a reduction in greenhouse gases, from certainly thinking about diesel or gasoline, but even thinking about electricity. If that electricity is coming from coal or oil or wood. So lots of opportunity for us. And I'm really happy about the pace of innovation that we're on.
Tucker, we really appreciate you providing such thoughtful and detailed answers. This has been really eye-opening, and this has just really, really interesting to speak about. Before we wrap here, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know? Any organizations, websites, et cetera, that you'd like to make sure that everybody's aware of?
Well, we certainly love people to come to propane.com and interact with us there. A great tab just talking about the environment. And from there, I think you can branch off if you're interested in agricultural issues or commercial mowing, like I talked about, or traditional things or non-traditional things like power generation and utility scale microgrids that fuel by propane and solar. So I would love to drive everybody to propane.com. And I have a really fascinating podcast myself. It's nice to be with y'all, but I have one that I think we just printed our 100th episode. It's called Path to Zero. And so you can source that too. And it's not a propane specific website. It's really about the energy issues that we face every day, equity, justice, carbon, what's going on in the oceans, what's going on with meteorology. So Path to Zero is that podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Tucker. We really appreciate you coming on to chat.
I really thank you for having me. It's been a really enjoyable time. Thank you.
Thank you.